Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
What is all this?
It's a research lab, agricultural engineering. Dean Barry founded Beta Vegetech 5 years ago.
So what exactly do you do?
We're saving the world.
Oh, good for you. I was getting a little worried about the world. Is that a square tomato?
Yes, it is. It's a pet project of Dean's. The square shape means that farmers can pack 35% more tomatoes per carton. It's cheaper, more efficient.
So that means every slice is exactly the same size?
How does it taste?
Who cares? It's a square tomato. You're doing the Lord's work.
Literally.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Everybody, all together now. Ready?
One more time.
Hey! There. Good morning! Hey, get up! Get out of bed! Even though let's just do that to people on a Sunday morning. Or just try. And the reason they're all sleeping in is because they look outside and it's been gray and cloudy and humid for about 140 days in a row. Just feels that way. Has this just been really, really odd weather? We'll talk with Rick DeMaio at 9:45 today about that. But Carol Brewer, is this just the strangest weather for a summer you've ever seen?
It's totally strange. And it's not normal August.
No.
You know, I feel like I expect like hot 90s
and apparently we might get some 90s, but we get 90% humidity is what we're getting. It seems it's just weird. It's just been odd. So with that in mind, let's get people prepared here for the great tomato debate of 2014. Because I have said things on this show about tomatoes, and some folks have taken issue with me because I said it wasn't a good tomato year, at least here in Chicago and environs. And other people have said, oh, no, mine are rocking, mine are great. Of course, I've had other people agree with me about this. So I think for In the Green Room this morning, I want you all to call in and tweet, and post on Facebook, and send me emails. Do whatever you want. And let me know what your tomato year is like right now. Because mine, well, if you look in my backyard, they are they're not doing very well. And I got these fancy schmancy indigo, purple, blueberry indigo tomatoes that are threatening to engulf the garage. The plant is, when it doesn't flop over, when it doesn't completely flop over like it did yesterday in the rainstorm, because I wasn't home for the rainstorm. I was out at Rich's Fox Willow Pines. Wait. Ouch. At Rich's Fox Willow Pines in Woodstock And I got caught in the rainstorm there, and so did a bunch of people. Man, it came down. Man, it was coming down out there. And then got home, and the tomato plant, half of it was leaning. Oh. But the problem is that tomato plant is supposed to produce these dark, they're so dark blue that they're black, basically. And I was wondering if anybody else is. I know they're growing them on the top of uncommon ground on Devon. And the plant itself, I've never seen such a huge plant with so little fruit production. Now, folks will say, well, you put too much nitrogen in the soil. That's what happens. No, I didn't put too much nitrogen in the soil. I barely fertilized at all, which may be another problem. But I did. I did fertilize a little bit at the beginning of the year, and then it's produced this plant that is there's these mammoth stalks that flop, and mammoth leaves and mammoth plant and these tiny little blueberries, blueberry-like tomatoes. And I tasted one the other week, and it was nasty. It was nasty. And I'm hoping that that was just because it was underripe. I suspect it's not getting enough sun. That's probably the deal.
Wait, I have a question.
Yeah.
Are you saying that why are they blue?
Because that's a variety.
Okay.
It's a special variety that I got from Don Choi at the organic greenhouse, Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse. And it was nice of him to, and you know, when he brought it into the studio, look at this new thing, we're trying it out, blah, blah, blah. And it's not working for me.
No.
No. But other people, I saw them growing on the top of uncommon ground on Devon their organic, and they looked great.
Yeah.
Those dark ones. Did you remember those tomatoes, the dark ones?
Yeah. I do remember those.
I got those in my yard. Nice. And so far, not so good. And
do you know anyone that's actually tasted them?
No.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact.
I wonder if there's
773-763-9278. So
I know I'm waiting for callers. I'm ready.
Yeah. No, I want to get this jump started here. I want folks to call and tell me, are you having a good tomato year or are you having a bad tomato year? Mine's not so good. And I think it has to do with sun, heat, things like that. Now, partly it's my fault because my yard is pretty shady. I'm trying to squeeze out whatever I can there. But the community garden, Green on McLean, that I'm involved with, those tomatoes, they're okay. The cherry tomatoes, the little ones are great. They're kicking butt right now. The big ones, not so much. We can't seem to get them to ripen. We've got these striped zebras. They're green zebra, whatever they are. The variety is. Kathleen, what's the variety? And they're supposed to stay green, but they're just hard as rocks, and they just refuse to ripen. So I'm kind of interested in what the rest of you are experiencing out there. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. Do call in, and, you know, who knows? Somebody gives me a really, really good story or has a really, really good tip or something. They might just walk away with a copy of
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
It just might happen. You never know. So 773-763-9278. And other stuff in the show today. Second hour, I'm very, very excited. I've been, you know what? This guy is tough to track down. Now, he's been out of town. And I think we'll find out where he's been gallivanting. But Chip Taylor, who's the founder and director of Monarch Watch, is going to be on the show in the second hour to basically give us the State of the Monarchs 2014. State of the Monarchs 2014. He sent me some stuff that I posted on my website. And I do need to explain something because I've run into a couple of people lately, and I mentioned how I, before every show, I write the whole show, what's going to happen on the show, on my website, on this week's show. And folks don't seem to understand that sometimes because, you know, and I'm killing myself on Saturday getting this done most of the time. And then I post it so that when you're listening to the show on Sunday, you can go to that page, this week's show. The links are already there. I know how people listen to radio. They kind of half listen. Sometimes they're doing other stuff. I know Zan is out there baking this morning and she just tweeted, terrible tomato year. So she agrees with me. So, hey, stop that. She agrees with me about the tomato year. What are you cooking today, Zan? But, so take her for example. She is kind of listening and might catch something interesting about the conversation and want to know how to get more information. Well, what you do is go to my website. You go to MikeNowak.net. MikeNowak.net. You go to the home page. You click on this week's show. There's a couple of places that you can find it. One of them is on the right side. It just says this week's show in green print. You click on that. Or this week's show in the upper left-hand corner. And when you do that, it takes you to the thing that I've written with all of the information for the conversation I'm having with my guests. So that if you happen to miss part of it, you can go and look at the links. You'll get more information. You can do follow-up. There's often places where, you know, if it's an issue that you want to do follow-through on, you can. That's how you do it. So I'm trying to make this really clear so that go to my homepage, MikeNowak.net, and then click on this week's show, and it takes you to that information, which I prepare every week so that you can have instant gratification when you go to my website and instant information as you're listening on Sunday morning. So there you go. Zan Nelson just tweeted she's cooking zucchini pancakes to freeze. Bring some over here. I need some zucchini pancakes.
She's also mentioning that she's had a terrible tomato year.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And you do have a caller, Kaeda.
Kaeda, okay,
South
I'll tell you what. Great. And I know why she's calling. And I'm going to talk to her in just a second. But meanwhile, we've got this conversation rolling about tomatoes. And I want you to let me know how your tomatoes are doing. 773-763-9278. Give me a holler. And I want to see if anybody is doing well. One of the people who is doing well is the guy I saw yesterday. And let me, before I get to Kaeda, I'm going to break and then go to Kaeda on the phone. So hang on, Kaeda. I'm going to be right with you. Went up to Rich's Foxwillow Pines yesterday, where I said the skies opened up. But until they did, we were having a lovely time. And I signed a bunch of books for folks. I want to thank folks for being there. Thanks the people from Heifer International, marking its 70th year, and Mano a Mano International Partners. Got to meet Dan Narr from Mano a Mano, which was really cool. Tom Micheletti. Is it Micheletti or Micheletti? I'm sorry, I've forgotten the last name, but from the former president of the American Hosta Society and Midwest Regional Hosta Society, and founder and president of the Northern Illinois Hosta Society. And he was sitting there identifying hostas for people. You know, they bring in a leaf and he goes, oh, that's a blah, blah, blah. and then he would write it with a magic marker on the leaf. I kind of like that. And as I pointed out to him, there are more hosta varieties on the planet than there are actual hostas. I know that doesn't make any sense, but that's true. That's the way I feel. But all these wonderful people were there, and of course, Rich and Susie Eyre, they were selling hostas. Margaret, the wonderful, lovely Margaret was there. I didn't realize, I said the other week she's 92 or 93 or something. She's 96 years old. Holy smoke. And there she was, being part of the event. I want to thank all the folks there and let you know that we have another event coming up. If you missed that, the event for
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
That one. It's coming up at Lurvy. Lurvy's in Des Plaines. Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center on Saturday, September 20th. Actually, we might squeeze in some other events before then, but that's the next booked one. Lurvy Landscape Supply and Garden Center. And that will be on September 20th from 11 a.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. And I hope that you will come by at 2550 East Dempster. It's just off 294, just east of 294 on Dempster in Des Plaines. And we will be doing a book signing there. So the Attack of the Killer Asparagus 2014 Summer Book Tour continues unabated. All right, we got folks calling in. They're telling us about their tomatoes. Yee-hoo! I'm going to have to find the tomato song if I possibly can. So stick around. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk. I'll talk to Kaida in just a sec.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Hi, this is Ron Calga from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at illinoisolar.org for more details.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it? You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
They Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you a ripe one, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit.
Homegrown tomatoes.
All together.
Homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. I'm already getting folks tweeting in. Let's Snappy J Dog says, my maters taste good, just having lots of rot and splitting, so overall yields are lower than I wanted. Matt Manzella tweeted, we've had a great tomato year so far. We did get the seeds from Walmart, so they're probably Monsanto mutants. But they taste fine. Let's go to the phones. Keep sending that stuff in. And my buddy, Kaida Muhammad, from the south side of Chicago and South Shore Market. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. Good morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning. And I saw that you sent out a text this morning that today is the last day of the South Shore Farmers Market. Today, noon till 5 p.m., 79th South Shore Drive, cooking demo with Chef in the Hood, Ramona Baptiste. Lots of fresh produce. Eggs. You've got some eggs there today, right?
Yeah, farm fresh eggs from Michigan. Yeah.
Awesome. I'm so glad. And how overall, how's the market been this year?
Well, the last 3 weeks went pretty well, Mike, considering we got off to a terribly slow start. And things picked up. But next year, we'll start planning next month for next season. And we're looking at going through September and October next year.
Uh-huh.
Planning real big. Got lots of people on board now, new resources, and lots of things happened, but they kind of happened too late, you know, but that's okay. We're focusing on 2015 now. So today is the last day,
mm-hmm.
and we're expecting a lot of people, and it's been overwhelming, but I've enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I understand that. You know, you set up your own market, that's got to be really difficult. And you were the one to send me the article several weeks ago about farmers markets in Illinois. And oddly enough, the number of markets is down this year from last year, although the number of markets in general over the last few years has been on the uptick.
Down compared to other states, Illinois.
Well, and compared to Illinois as well. That article said that the number in Illinois had gone down a little bit too, just between 2013 and 2014.
Yeah, that's what the results that whoever did the research, that's what their findings were.
And you're having. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Kaida.
That's okay. No, I was saying it didn't surprise me because I knew there had to be a method to this madness, and I couldn't have been the only one experiencing it. So,
well, if you know, now that you're going, this is the second year, right? That you did this.
Yes.
All right. Going into the third year, what have you learned? What are important lessons?
Some of the important lessons that I've learned is to when people give you their word, hold their feet to the fire. Don't let go. When people say, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to be there. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. Hold their feet to the fire. Don't let them get away with it. And these people who were promising to carry out certain tasks didn't do it. So, a lot of lessons learned.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll tell you something, Kaya. That happens in any organization. That's just the way those things go. You always get, you know, somebody's going to get stuck with the work, and it's usually the person who organizes the thing.
Yeah, it did. Like I said, it was overwhelming, but, you know, in the end, I'm just really excited how the last 3 weeks, anyhow, turned out.
Well, see, this is a good starting point for next year.
Absolutely, and we'll be planning for that next month in September. We'll start planning for it next year. Got a great board and planning committee in place now, and I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to it.
So, did you call to talk about tomatoes as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got a great tomato crop going. I'm taking part in the Chicago Tomato Project. With the University of Illinois, and my tomatoes are with the only problem I'm having is rodents. So yeah, and I find tomatoes on the ground with a nice big chunk taken out of one or two or three. The only major other problem that I've noticed. There's some cracking, but overall, my tomato crop has been awesome. I've been giving them away to my neighbors and friends, and everybody is just really excited over the taste. And one of my neighbors, a three-year-old, told me that my tomatoes were very tasty. And this was during a time when we kept finding tomatoes with little bites taken out of them. So I said, the squirrels are eating the tomatoes. Then when the little girl told me that my tomatoes were very tasty, I said, so you're the rodent that's been taking bites.
Oh, nice. Nice.
It was so funny because she was nodding her head as she was telling me my tomatoes were very tasty.
So what kind were you growing?
I've got several varieties. Duster and Brandy Boy, Mountain Fresh, and Big Beef, Italian Air. And let me see, I can't pronounce the name, but it's some kind of a Yugoslavian brand. It's an indeterminate.
Yugoslavia doesn't exist anymore.
Well, that's the name of it. It's something Yugo. I can't remember the name, but I don't have the sheet in front of me. Yeah.
It's named after the car. They named it after the car.
They named it after the car, yeah. And then we have a brand named Eva. But, there's some blight, not a whole lot.
Well, I found out from Nikki Jabour in Nova Scotia, Halifax, Nova Scotia, who we did the simulcast with several weeks ago, that there's early and late blight going on up along the East Coast. Apparently, she was speculating that the one hurricane that came up that coast might have brought some of that up the coast, but they're having issues with that up there in Canada. I've seen issues with it in Michigan, in Wisconsin, but I haven't really heard of it in Illinois. So, if any of my listeners know of late or early blight, and late blight in particular is a disease that can really, really wipe out a crop. And you got to keep your eyes out for that one. I'm going to move along here, Kaida, and talk to some of the other folks who are calling in about their tomatoes. But I really appreciate hearing from you. And again, for folks who are interested and are on the South Side, the South Shore Farmers Market is today from noon till 5 p.m., 79th South Shore Drive. 79th and South Shore Drive. You'll have a cooking demo, but you've got fresh produce, farm fresh eggs, and more, and it's the last farmer's market of the season at the South Shore location, and you'll be doing it again next year.
Oh, yes, we will, and thank you again, Mike, for listening to me.
Kaida, I always love listening to you, and I appreciate you listening to the show and for all the hard work that you do with community gardens in Chicago and the farmer's market down there. You're to be applauded.
Thank you so much, Mike, and you have a great day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
773-763-9278. Let's go to Nanette in Hammond. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
And you've been growing tomatoes this year?
Yes, this is like the sixth year that we've done this. We got our tomatoes from a fruit stand, I don't know what you could say. They were already plants.
Oh, okay. All right. Was it in the area? So that do you know if they were organic?
Yeah, we picked them in, we bought them in Portage, Indiana.
Okay.
From a farmer's stand, market type thing. They're doing really well.
But?
Yeah, you know, putting out lots of tomatoes. The only problem is that the tomatoes aren't ripening. We have two of the regular tomatoes ripening and two cherry tomatoes ripening.
Uh-huh.
Now they're getting nice and big, but they're not turning red.
Uh-huh. You know, and it's some of what I've been hearing, and I've experienced a little bit of that myself in my yard and in our community garden.
Yeah. The thing about it is we've got them in the sunlight. And we've been lucky this year that the squirrels haven't attacked them yet, knock on wood.
Ah, yeah. Well, you heard Kaida. She's had some issues with that. We had a couple in our community garden that they had a bite or two taken out of them. And that's discouraging, you know, just as they're about to get ripe. And then somebody, not much you can do about that.
Except sit out there with a BB gun and shoot at the squirrel.
Yikes. Okay.
I'm kidding.
I know you are. No, I appreciate that.
But I think one of the reasons why they've left our tomatoes alone
is
because we have a pear tree in our backyard also, and they've been going after the pears instead of the tomatoes.
Ah, have you had issues with the losing pears?
Yeah, we have issues losing pears every year. We never seem to get any before they do.
How is the partridge in your pear tree? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, Nanette, thank you so much for calling and sharing your tomato, not exactly woes, but the slowness of it.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see what Rick DeMaio has to say about whether we'll get a little heat and sun to get those rolling again. And I appreciate you listening to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. And Shay is in Naperville. Did I pronounce that? Is that Shay?
Yes, that's correct.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, and my tomatoes are doing wonderful. I do all mine in containers because we have septic and really large trees. So everything gets done on my deck in containers, and my tomatoes are doing great, especially my Cherokee Purple.
I love Cherokee Purple. That's a great tomato.
Yeah, everything is heirloom this year, and it's all organic, and the only problem I've had this year is chipmunks and squirrels. We have live traps out, and so, you know, I take them and let them go at the park district or somewhere else, but I'm sure they'll make their way back.
Oh, so I was going to say, you know they're coming right back to your place.
I know they are, because they got a fest going. So, yeah, they come right up on the deck. I can sit out there, and they're two feet away, and they don't care that I'm even sitting there. but I do everything in containers, and my watermelon are doing fabulous. Because I trellis everything up, so it climbs up.
Ah.
But my zucchini this year were horrible. I had four plants, and all of them had male flowers only.
So really?
Got no fruit whatsoever.
Okay, I got to tell you something along that line. I got a story from my community garden this year, which was kind of odd. We have had issues over the years. I don't know if you listened to the show before, but...
Always.
Well, thank you. When we grow pumpkins, they tend to disappear.
Right.
And so we stopped growing pumpkins in the garden. We stopped seeding pumpkins. However, this year in the community garden, all these, we had several pumpkin vines just emerge, you know, grow, you know, shooting out of the earth. And they started to take over, and they have begun to take over the garden. If you know anything about a pumpkin patch, it'll just—that's all you'll see. So we're busily just moving the vines away from the other vegetables in the garden. But these things have become huge, and for weeks I mean, these things, the vines were huge. Not only did we not have female flowers, we did not have male flowers. We had no flowers.
Wow.
For weeks and weeks and weeks. And I went online. I was looking around for advice on that. And every time I found an article, it was on how, you know, I was asking about lack of flowers. And then the article would say, well, if you're not getting female flowers, I'm going, no, you don't get it. I'm not getting any flowers, male or female. And then we had a couple of hot days where the garden didn't get watered as well as it should have. And Kathleen went out there one day and she says, wow, now those pumpkin vines are droopy. They're really droopy. So she goes out and waters the thing. And then a couple of days later, the flowers just started popping. Boom, 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 boom. And, you know, we're wondering, maybe you need to stress out the plant a little bit.
That's right.
Get it to think it's on its last legs, and then it'll start sending. And then from there on, we were getting both, male and female. But then when the female flowers bloomed and the pumpkins started growing, we were losing the pumpkins. And I found... And I found out that critters will take the young pumpkins.
Right.
Yeah. They, you know, and I thought, well, you know, who's stealing our pumpkins? Well, it turns out it's probably the critters out there.
Yeah. They eat my strawberries, too. I have strawberries, like, behind. I grow lettuce all summer because I can move it into shade because I'm on a deck. So, and I do spinach all year, you know, like leaf baby spinach. So I have fresh lettuce all year. This baby, and they hop right in into the strawberries, and as soon as there's a little tiny strawberry, it's gone.
Yeah, we've had that issue with strawberries too. they just disappear. So you gotta fence them or net them or, you know, do something with them to preserve that. It's always you know, critters are there. That's one of the challenges of.
We really love listening to your show because we go to a CSA, the Green Earth Institute in Naperville, to get more vegetables during the year. And I'm really glad that someone is out there promoting organic and CSAs. So we really appreciate it.
I'm the guy.
You're the guy.
I'm the guy. I'm the guy who actually understands the difference. All right. I tell you what, Shay, you are... since you've been having issues and you're such a sweetie and you listen to the show, I am going to send you a copy of the book.
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
I can't wait. That'll be great.
So hang on. I want you to talk to Carol, and she will get your address, and we will fire one of those out in the mail to you.
Great. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for calling. You have a wonderful Sunday, and good luck with the rest of the gardening season.
Yeah. Thanks. Bye-bye.
There she goes. So it's good to hear that some people are having some of the same problems. By the way, Zan tweeted here that today she's also cooking zucchini scones, zucchini bread, zucchini salad, frozen zucchini pucks. She writes, sounds weird, but great way to preserve overabundant zucchini. Yeah, I kind of got that message. Kind of got that idea. All right, folks. We'll find out why we're having this weird weather from Mr. DeMaio coming up in just a couple of minutes. So stick around for that. Let's play a little more of this thing as we go out.
Money came by, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
In the green room.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com, right in your own backyard.
Hi,
I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening's Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakening's features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Just got a tweet. Facebook post from Carolyn Lewis, who says, speaking of tomatoes, she's headed out to the Heirloom Tomato Festival at Chicago Botanic Garden in Glencoe today from 11 to 4. I will track down a little bit more of that information and get that to you. The major theme of today's show is how to save the monarch butterfly. We'll be talking to Chip Taylor in the second hour. And as these things so often happen, the cover story of the September-October issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Already? September-October? That hurts. I know it's still August. But to get that in the mail, I go, oh, really? Already? Anyway, it's about how to create a butterfly haven. The article features the Dennis and June Finnegan Garden on the far south side of Chicago, which has been designated an official monarch way station. If you're growing plants that benefit monarchs, you can go to monarchwatch.org to fill out a registration form to see if your yard qualifies. But there are many other butterflies that need havens. Among them are swallowtails, admirals, commas, question marks, painted ladies, mourning cloaks, and others. All of them have been welcomed into the Finnegan's Garden and have been encouraged to flourish with the help of echinacea, monarda, heliopsis, and other butterfly-friendly plants. Then there's my column. On the inside back page, I try to make it reader-friendly by spreading chocolate on the margins, but it makes the pages stick together. Win some, lose some. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Pick one up in newsstands all over town or get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Zibrato, Zibrato, Zibrato. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you two can be the proud owner of the quality goes in before that name goes on. One-tenth of a dollar, one-tenth of a dollar. We got service after the sale. How about perfume? We got perfume. How about an engagement ring? Some for the little lady, some for the little lady, some for the little lady.
Yeah, how about a weather forecast for the little lady? Let's go to Rick DeMaio on the phone line there. Mr. DeMaio, come on in. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike, but I have to start off the show by saying I hope the
a person that I saw being pulled out of Lake Michigan not more than about 45 minutes ago is doing better. And
wow.
Mike, the story goes like this. I bring my dog every Sunday down to Lake Michigan at Lighthouse Beach, generally between about 8:30 at 9. I'm walking down the boardwalk there, or the what do you want to call it, the little walkway that leads down to the beach. I notice that there's two people working on what appears to be someone who is just pulled out of the beach. And I'm like, or the one, I'm like, are they working on someone from a standpoint of like doing some sort of an exercise, or this is actual event of someone trying to save someone else's life? And it clearly was the second one. And I walk over and I go, is everything okay? And the woman says, yeah, I got him to start breathing again. I performed CPR on him. And Mike, if there's ever a story to be told for people who have a chance to take CPR, this is it. Because it goes like this. Elderly woman, elderly man go down to the beach. The man's about 75, 76, goes out for a swim, loses consciousness, and begins literally to float head down, no pulse, no breathing, drifting off to the side of the beach beyond the area where you have some of the pontoons that kind of marks off the area where people swim. Granted, at this time, there's no lifeguards. A woman about 60 years old notices this man just basically bobbing up and down. Another man comes over, pulls him out of the water, and the woman immediately begins CPR. The man had no pulse, was not breathing, and was completely blue, and she got him to breathe again while the other man held the arms back. I helped pull the elderly man out of the water. Didn't really do too much. They were basically taking over. Called Evanston Fire Department, and the paramedics were on the scene in about 5 minutes, and the man's life was saved.
Holy smoke.
I'm sitting there looking at this going, the woman goes, I guess I'm a hero. I go, no, ma'am, you're an angel on a day like today. You saved that man's life. And she literally said that she took a CPR class years ago and did a follow-up, and she said, I kind of knew exactly what to do. And she was very modest about it. I'm like, you just saved a man's life. So on this day where I know a lot of people will probably be going out to the beach because it's finally a beach day, think about what you would have to do if you saw something like that in the water. Pretty amazing.
That is, how is it you stumble onto these things, Rick?
Well, I don't stumble on them a lot. I just happened to be there when it occurred. But the oddest thing was, I'm standing there looking at these two people working on this person, thinking it was just sort of like one of those things where you bring people down to the beach and you have those models that they're laying on the beach and you show them how to do CPR. So I felt like an idiot. I'm standing there for about 30 seconds, 45 seconds, just doing nothing, going, oh, I wonder what they're doing. And at that point, literally, they were saving the man's life. So fingers crossed, hoping that this man is going to, I think he'll make it. The cops seem to think that he was going to do okay. But the water's a little rough out there. We finally got this warm front to push north. So if you are heading down to the beach, make sure that you take a little bit extra care, because what typically happens, Mike, and studies have shown this, most of the drownings that occur in area beaches, lakes, particularly Lake Michigan, happens in the last couple of weeks of August and the first week of September when the water is at its warmest, and everybody is trying to get that last beach day in before they know they won't be able to do it anymore. So you generally tend to take more chances at this time of the year. So a little bit of a word to the wise on both levels there.
Absolutely. Thanks for your help in that. But that woman, she does sound like a hero. And that's why it's good to know CPR.
Yeah. And once the paramedics left, I said, okay, I'm going for a swim now. So if you want to do it again, I'm all fine with you being here. Just stay right there. And she kind of laughed a little bit.
Yeah, but not very much, I'm sure.
Speaking of the warm front going north, Patrick Sciacca, our climate expert, sent me some information regarding 90-degree weather in Chicago. And, you know, we've not had many so far this year. We haven't had any back-to-back. And strangely enough, here it is, the 24th of August and the, you know, last weekend of August for, you know, the summer 2014, which officially kind of marks the end of what we call climatological summer, even though we know that we can get pretty warm weather into September. The average date of the first couple of 90s in a row, back-to-back that is, generally occurs about the 23rd to 24th of June. The earliest is about the 4th or 5th of May, and the latest is about the 9th, or I should say the 7th or 8th of September. And it looks like we're going to do back-to-back beginning today and then tomorrow as well. So we're kind of, you know, treading on record territory here. as far as getting any extended period of heat. And it looks like we'll probably get into that today and obviously tomorrow as well. We'll expect it to hit 90 degrees and feel a lot hotter with the ungodly high levels of humidity we can all say we've seen and felt the last few days.
So you say we're going to get a 90, you think, tomorrow?
Yeah, 90 today, definitely 90 tomorrow.
Today and tomorrow. So it'll be first back-to-backs of the season.
These will be the first back-to-backs. And again, we average about the 23rd or 24th of June. So by doing it on these days, we're literally about 2 months behind schedule on that. And that's pretty much how most of the summer has been going.
Yeah.
And the latest is the 7th to the 8th. So you think about that, we're missing it by about 2 weeks. But yesterday was a very interesting event from a standpoint of a non-forecasted major rain event that came through. And I guess Friday you can say the same thing was a major rain event that didn't come through. So Mother Nature always knows how to humble us meteorologists by thinking, okay, we'll have one more day of heavy rain on Friday. We got nothing. And then while it appeared that we were going to get nothing yesterday, the system that kind of traversed the Mississippi River early in the morning just kept trucking along. And as it interacted with the lake breeze that was bringing some amazing low clouds and fog in along the lakefront yesterday, there was some area that, again, got almost 2 inches of rain in about an hour and a half. I know some parts of northwest Indiana, the Dyer area, had almost 4 inches of rain. And, you know, this comes just a few days after Midway Airport reported almost 4 inches of rain in about an hour. So
no kidding.
Again, we can, yeah, that, well, that was not yesterday. That was 2 days ago.
Right.
On that, I believe it was that Thursday, the overnight Wednesday and the Thursday. And it's amazing how these rain events continue to be extremely heavy and very, very prolific. And it seems to be more and more the norm rather than you know, than the extreme.
And I was mentioning earlier how just this weather has been odd. It's cloudy every day and kind of humid and sort of like you're in the netherworld or something. It's just been the strangest August.
Well, part of the reason why the dew point temperatures have been so high, a couple of things. Obviously, the air mass is moist, but people don't realize this time of the year, that corn is pulling a lot of moisture out of the ground. And strangely enough, you can actually look at a weather map and see the highest dew point, that's the actual measure of moisture in the atmosphere, at its highest level pretty much across the Corn Belt. You can go from central Ohio into Indiana, Illinois, obviously into Iowa, parts of northern Missouri, even into Kansas and eastern South Dakota, where they're still growing quite a bit of corn this time of the year. It's getting more and more out there. That corn generally tends to pull a lot of moisture out of the ground, releases it through the stomata part, the leaves of the corn stalk. And as long as the atmosphere doesn't get mixed up, or at least I should say disturbed, that moisture basically just sits there and replenishes itself every day. So we've had a very wet spring. We've had a fairly decent amount of rain during the summer, even though we've had some dry periods. This is going down as a very, very wet summer. And some of the initial analysts or analysis, I should say, from the Illinois Farm Bureau and from the National Farm Bureau showed that this will be the best corn crop ever in the history of the United States. I mean, the amount of corn that's coming out of the ground is going to reach, you know, record numbers. So you add that on to the fact that we're already in a somewhat stagnant, moist, and unstable atmosphere, and the available moisture just continues to increase. You know, 100 years ago, we didn't have this much corn, and the atmosphere probably wasn't as moist, but this is definitely adding to it, without a doubt.
I was just looking, I just happened to notice the stuff that you were talking about, Pat Skatch sending the information about back-to-back 90s, and forgive me if you mentioned it, but he says the latest that's ever happened is September 7th and 8th in 1978.
Right.
So,
yeah,
so
I
we're.
I mentioned that. So we're only 2 weeks away from that.
But, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Excuse me. I was probably scrolling down messages here. So does this represent a pattern change for the next several weeks, or is this something else?
No, it seems that we'll be into somewhat warm and humid weather up until about Wednesday, and then by Thursday and Friday, it definitely begins to cool off somewhat. The only wild card is that the tropics in the Atlantic are getting going. We just had Tropical Storm Cristobal develop overnight. That looks like it's going to become a hurricane, but everything shows that it's going to remain generally about 200 miles east of the U.S. mainland. You know, and when you compare that to average, obviously we're well below normal, even though the ocean temperature of the Atlantic are still fairly above normal. There's just been too much low-level shear to get these hurricanes or these tropical storms to develop. You compare that with the eastern Pacific, and, you know, we're already up to 13 named storms. So the weather out there obviously has been dominated by this really super large ridge of high pressure over the eastern Pacific, which has obviously nudged its way into California, one of the reasons why they've been so dry. So you can kind of connect the heat wave and the drought in California to the above-average tropical storm activity in the eastern Pacific, whereas in the western Atlantic, if we start getting some of these storms going out there, generally that tends to slow down the progression of fronts into the upper Midwest. And if that seems to be what's going to start to happen over the next 1 to 2 months, we could be in for above normal temperatures in the month of September. Even though, believe it or not, Mike, there have been some reports of an early frost or an early freeze across the upper Midwest, but I don't know about that. That still seems to be a little bit far-reaching.
So, you're not reading the Farmer's Almanac again, are you?
No. I'm actually reading some higher-level publications.
Higher level? What's higher level than the Farmer's Almanac?
This is Dr. Farmer. So in short here, in the last minute that we have, forecast basically hot and humid today. It looks like we're going to stay rain-free today. I'm about 90% sure on that. Over the last couple of days, it has not been easy to forecast this stuff. It looks like we'll stay rain-free. 91, 92 today. Heat index, though, probably up to 100. It's going to be real humid. Ditto for tomorrow. Overnight lows probably only in the upper 70s, maybe near 80 degrees. And then it looks like a pretty good chance of rain comes back in here Tuesday and Wednesday as this air mass begins to shift off the east. And with that, more heavy rain, so we can easily see an additional 2 to 4 inches of rain beginning Tuesday into Wednesday before it clears out and dries out Thursday, Friday, and Saturday and Sunday. So when we talk next week, we'll be talking about more heavy rain. Already the rainiest or the wettest period ever at Midway Airport since records have been kept there since the late 1920s.
Wow.
And it looks like it's the pattern will basically kind of shift a little bit more so towards a cooler one over the next week and a half.
Okay.
We'll talk about that next week.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week then.
Sounds good, Mike.
It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I like watching the puddles gather rain. And all I can do is just pour some tea for two and speak my point of view, but it's not safe. It's not safe.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. And I can see, Carol, you're working on... Okay. I think she's busy on the phone with Chip Taylor. We'll get to him in just a second. A couple of things. We were talking tomatoes in the first hour and whether your tomatoes are doing well. And I just got a tweet from Celesta 1013 who says, mine are sad. And I got an email here from Laura and Dennis, who write, we grow tiny tomato varieties to avoid splitting and theft by squirrels. We guide them into tomato baskets stacked to about 7 feet tall. Here in Glenview, a few Pesci's grape and cherry varieties in 14-inch pot are yielding well and are especially sweet this year. We water them nearly daily when it does not rain well. They get fed with a 10-10-10 general fertilizer every 2 weeks. In Elk Grove, our son's 2013 bumper crop left seeds, which have volunteered into 7 fine plants in the ground, with generally orangey-red hybrids doing great, too. All the tending they have needed was to guide them unto a few tall tomato baskets.
They have not been fed nor artificially watered all summer. Both sites receive full sun at least three quarters of the day. Enjoy your show. Meaning they enjoy the show. And I appreciate that. Thanks, Laura and Dennis. Are we having an issue getting Chip this?
Yeah, it keeps going to voicemail. So I'm leaving him a message and telling him to call us, but I keep trying to. So if you're out there, Chip.
I don't know that he's listening because he's in Kansas, as far as I know. Maybe I need to figure out if there's hold on here, another number that I could pass along to you. I actually do have. Wait, you got it? Okay. Good. All right. While we're waiting to get Chip on the line there, somebody mentioned earlier about the heirloom tomato weekend at the Chicago Botanic Garden. So I went to their site, which is chicagobotanic.org. Saturday and Sunday, well, we're at Sunday. So today from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. At the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden. Get new ideas about everyone's favorite garden favorite tomatoes with programs focused on growing and using heirloom varieties. Trace the fascinating history of tomatoes as they've traveled the world. You might not realize that for a long time, people considered tomatoes poisonous. You got to think about those early folks who tried tomatoes, risking their very lives. There will be volunteers up at the Botanic Garden today providing tips on growing and cooking with tomatoes, as well as assistance with gardeners' tomato problems. Tour the tomatoes growing at the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden with the staff horticulturist. Learn how easy it is to save your own heirloom / open pollinated tomato seeds at demonstrations throughout the weekend. Shop for tomato-related items in the wheelbarrow shop and from local vendors, and families can take part in a variety of hands-on games and activities. And that's all at the Chicago Botanic Garden today, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Regenstein Fruit and Vegetable Garden. For more information, go to chicagobotanic.org. Excuse me. And now we will go to the phones and bring in the man who started Monarch Watch. He's the founder and director, Chip Taylor. Chip, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, but I hope you're cooler up there than we are down here.
We are, although it's supposed to get into the 90s today. What kind of weather are you talking about? And you're talking about Kansas?
I'm talking about Kansas, and it looks like we're going to hit 99 to 100 again today.
Yikes. How much of that have you had lately?
It's really been a fairly moderate summer here, but the last few days have gotten a little bit serious.
Yeah, it's weird how I was just talking with my meteorologist, Rick DeMaio, in the 9 o'clock hour. We in Chicago, we're going to probably have our first two back-to-back 90-degree days today and tomorrow. For the summer.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been odd. It's just been really cool. We keep getting the cool weather that dips down from Canada in this part of the country, and even while other areas of the country, perhaps Kansas, get some heat. Although, in general, we haven't had the nasty heat and drought in the middle of the country that we've had for the last several years.
No, it's been better here too.
Yeah, and that's actually a good place to start, because you watch that in terms of how it affects the monarch population. And by the way, if folks, I'm interested in your questions at 773-763-9278. If you've been observing monarchs in the Chicago area or anywhere in the country, if you're listening elsewhere, give us a call or post on Facebook or on Twitter
Or send me an email, mike@mikenovak.net. But the drought and heat have been a real issue with monarchs. Now, I was looking at a couple of the posts that you have done on Monarch Watch. And earlier this year, when we had that, there was a conference at the Chicago Botanic Garden about monarchs where you spoke, and I saw you there. In preparation for that, I did a post on my own website, and I quoted a Washington Post article about the monarch crisis. And for folks who are new to this and you've been on Mars for a couple of years, our monarchs are in trouble, at least they have been for the last couple of years or several years. And the Washington Post article pointed out three reasons for the decline in monarch butterflies in North America, and their list was deforestation in Mexico, recent bouts of severe weather that I just talked about, the drought and heat, and the growth of herbicide-based agriculture destroying crucial milkweed flora in the Midwest. However, then you wrote recently your top three, it's not quite the same. You say in the order, the adoption of herbicide-tolerant crops, the ethanol mandate, and development or habitat loss. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, yes. Looking at the total picture here, one of the things that's striking about almost every animal that's in decline, every animal, and that includes insects that are in decline, has to do with habitat. So we have to look at habitat first. We have to ask if, is the habitat stable? For a long time, in the early part of the work that we were doing with monarchs, it appeared that the habitat was relatively stable. And then starting with the adoption of Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, and then followed by the ethanol mandate, we began to see a tremendous loss of habitat. And, of course, we have habitat loss due to development on a scale of about 6,000 acres a day in this country. And that nibbles away at all of the support that this population has. And it's not just monarchs that are living in these areas that are being developed or being used for cropping, but it's all the other species as well. So when we're losing monarchs, we're losing a lot of other things. And that's of great concern. Monarchs are simply that kind of a surrogate for a larger issue here in terms of habitat loss.
Or the canary in the coal mine or something like that. But okay, give me that figure again. What, 6,000 acres a day you say we're losing in habitat?
Yeah. Yeah, 6,000 acres a day is what we're losing in habitat. That's about 2.2 million acres per year, and that's a very significant loss of habitat. But that's not the really big thing that's been going on. That's of the three, that's certainly the minor one. Just consider this: when the ethanol mandate came about, signed by President Bush at the end of 2007, immediately the farmers began to look for where they could plant more corn, because it was obvious that the price of corn was going to go up, and it did. And so what we had was a consumption of a lot of habitat to convert to cropland very shortly after the signing of the ethanol mandate, to the extent that 24 million acres of habitat were converted to croplands in 5 years. Now, 24 million acres it's hard to fathom. It's hard to figure out, just to wrap your mind about how big an area that is. But it's as big as the state of Indiana. So in 5 years, we've lost a large amount of habitat. And that's been significant because it's had an effect on a lot of other things as well. I mean, the pheasant hunters throughout the Midwest have had a real problem with this because pheasant populations, which were being produced in those habitats, have gone way down. So pheasant populations have declined in six Midwestern states. And the people who are relying on pheasant hunting as a way of earning a living from running motels and running restaurants and so on and so forth in the Midwest are hurting a little bit because of this ethanol mandate.
Well, you mentioned that other species are going to be affected by this. I think it bears repeating. You just said that 24 million acres, or basically land the size of the state of Indiana, was converted to cropland in 5 years. Now, you're familiar with Doug Tallamy's work, and that's the alarm he keeps sounding
that we are we're just losing so much habitat that we can't sustain this. And he's right now concerned about insect biomass, obviously monarch butterfly being part of that. But from what I understand, the Obama administration is still on board with the ethanol program. What's the story on that?
Well, this is an issue that has to be settled with Congress. I mean, Congress created the ethanol mandate, and Congress has to put the brakes on. EPA has started or has attempted to put the brakes on, and there have been howls of protest that you can't do this. And you know, for the you have to give it to the farmers because you know they have a right to make a living, and they have a right to make a living off their land. And this is, in some sense, not their problem. But what we really have to understand is whether ethanol is a good thing or a bad thing in the long run in terms of how to use our landscape. Are we really getting an energy benefit from ethanol? And there are a lot of people who think we're not. So that's another issue altogether. But I can tell you that the Obama administration is very much on the pollinator side of things. The president produced a memo, a presidential memo, and on the 20th of June this year, in which he commanded that all federal agencies get on board with pollinator conservation. So any federal agency that has anything to do with landscape or anything to do with land management or management of wildlife is now gearing up to become engaged in the protection of pollinators, and this includes monarch butterflies. I think, you know, you go back to Doug Ptolemy's point here, and what Doug is advocating, of course, is for native plants, and he's absolutely right. It's the native plants that feed our wildlife. And my take on that is that it's the pollinators that create the native plants. The pollinators provide the services that native plants need. You know, about 70% of that vegetation out there is pollinated by insects. And if we don't have the insects, we're not going to have the plants. So the fundamental here is that in order to keep the system connected, you have to have all these keystone players in place. And the keystone players in this particular case are your pollinators. Most people are not aware of how many small insects are involved in pollination. Most people aren't aware that there are probably 50 bee species in their immediate area that do some pollinating. There's, you know, many of these things are pretty inconspicuous. You might know honeybees, bumblebees, but that's about it. But there are a lot of other bees out there, and they're all very important, and many of them have very intimate relationships with particular plant species. And so if those pollinators aren't there, the particular plants don't get pollinated, and then they disappear because they're not producing the seeds that are needed to sustain the population. So in order to keep things together, you have to keep all the different components active in the system. And this means you've got to keep the pollinators going to keep the native plants going and so on and so forth. So these are relationships that all ecologists kind of understand intuitively, but it's not clear that we've gotten that message out to the public. And this is why we, you know, why I go on programs like this to try to talk about this, to make it kind of clear that everything is connected out there, that we need to pay attention to those connections because systems fall apart if you don't. I mean, we've got a history on the planet here of human populations not paying attention to the connections that sustain them, and the civilizations collapse. I'm not saying that our civilization is going to collapse, but we weaken our systems if we don't pay attention to all these connections.
That's Chip Taylor, actually Orly R. What kind of a name is Orly R?
Well, Orly is a Welsh name. It's named after my father, who was the son of a Welshman. So that's where that comes from. And I've only encountered it one other time in my life. There may be other Orlys out there, but I haven't run into them.
That's why you went with Chip, huh?
That's it, yeah, Chip off the old block.
Right. Chip Taylor, he's a University of Kansas professor of ecology and evolutionary biology, founder and director of Monarch Watch. You can go to, and you really should link to Monarch Watch. Go to the website, monarchwatch.org. There's another site that I became aware of, another organization I became, and there are plenty of organizations out there helping with the monarch issue, but at the conference at the Chicago Botanic Garden earlier in the year, I became aware of Monarch Joint Venture, which is another group that folks might want to a visit, go to the website and get information from all of these places. And we'll get to the idea of planting milkweed in a second, but I asked people to call in at 773-763-9278, and Ann in Chicago did, so I want to go to Ann. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning, Mike. I've been living at my house for 29 years, and a couple years back, say about 10 or 12 years ago, I put in a white butterfly bush. And my front yard is also laden with a bunch of phlox and anything that can attract butterflies. I've had monarchs stop by for a drink. The blue butterflies, the yellow ones, little things that look more like a moth, but they're probably a butterfly as well. Because I use my front yard to attract butterflies and bees so that they go in my backyard, especially the bees, mm-hmm. to pollinate my fruits and veggies in the backyard. And it's just wonderful to see them stop by and drink from my plants.
And are you in the city of Chicago?
Yeah, I'm in Chicago. I'm in South Lakeview. I've been here 29 years. And it's just amazing because when I see a butterfly, I think to myself, which generation is this? Is he the one that's still going north, or is he the one that's going south?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, Chip, what this points out is that even if you're in a major metropolitan area, you can make a difference by putting plants in your yard that will attract bees and butterflies, our pollinators.
Yeah, and in between, I have a couple of those milkweeds, although the neighbors look at me and say, that's nothing but a weed, and I said, but that's the stopover for the butterflies.
Well, you know what? My new branding issue is to call it a monarch plant. Don't call it milkweed. Some people say monarch weed, but I want to get the weed out of there. Because we have this prejudice against anything that's called a weed, so let's call it monarch. And I don't understand why people don't like it. It's a very exotic looking plant. It's very interesting, and it has a wonderful fragrance. It's just the association we've had for all these years. Well, Ann, thank you so much. I appreciate the work you're doing to help our butterflies.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
773-763-9278. She brings up an interesting point, Chip, about attracting butterflies. And you mentioned, and we both mentioned Doug Tallamy, and his whole idea is put native plants in there. She mentioned butterfly bush, I believe. And that's not a native. Yet it attracts butterflies and bees. What is your feeling about having those kinds of plants available to butterflies?
Well, butterfly bush in particular is a very controversial plant because it has proven to be invasive along the East Coast and West Coast, and even in a couple of places in Kentucky. It would not be invasive in Chicago. It would not be invasive in any of the northern states. It's not invasive here in Kansas. I mean, it doesn't even begin to propagate here in Kansas.
Well, you're lucky if you can keep it alive in some of these states.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is a very good nectar plant. And one of the things that we are striving for in all of this native, non-native thing is a balance. Because, we're full of non-natives in this country. The things we eat are non-native. And we have a lot of non-native plants that have become naturalized that we don't even recognize as non-native or a problem. I mean, most of the honey that's produced in this country comes from plants that have been introduced from Europe, for example. And so we have a lot of non-natives here that are not a problem. It's the problem with the non-natives that really concerns people are the ones that become invasive, become pest species, and we have plenty of those, and those are things we need to be concerned about. And if we're really worried about buddleia along, say, the North Carolina coast, we shouldn't be planting it there. There's no question about that. So we have to be careful of what we do here. But we're looking for a balance. We're looking to provide for resources for these various species out there. And there are times when our native species don't produce very much nectar or pollen. And so it doesn't hurt to have a zinnia in your garden. It doesn't hurt to have a butterfly bush in your garden or some of these other things because they're providing resources that the native plants can't provide all the time. So, we need a balance. We need mostly natives, but a few non-natives in there are useful at many times. And we created a bird garden a couple of years ago here in Olathe, Kansas, and when you create a bird garden, you want to have something where you have seeds that the birds can use in the wintertime. You want to have berries that they can use in the wintertime, and so on and so forth. And, you know, there are a few natives that provide those things, but most of the best berry plants for birds, most of the best seed plants for birds are non-natives.
That's interesting. Although, from what I understand also, there are some fruits that birds consume, and it actually robs them of energy to try to digest them.
I have to be careful as what you select, right? There's no question about that. So a little research is needed.
Yeah, that's Chip Taylor from Monarch Watch. Our telephone number is 773-763-9278. Chip, I'm going to take a short break. I want to get back to you, and I want to explore the pesticide issue. We kind of danced around it in terms of habitat, but part of what's going on here is the use of pesticides like Roundup, which is glyphosate, and what that is doing to our milkweed in the United States, and your effort to get folks to plant more milkweed. We will get back to Chip Taylor. Stick around. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, birdbaths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Hi, this is Ron Calgo from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at illinoisolar.org for more details.
Hokey Smokes, kids, the Air and Water Show is history. The weird, humid, and stormy weather is still with us. But so is the Christy Weber Farm and Garden Center sidewalk sale. Yep, they've extended it for another weekend, which means that you're the winner. Annuals, perennials, trees, and shrubs are significantly marked down. Containers, plants, planters, and bird feeders are all on sale. For instance, all ceramic planters 10-inch wide and larger are marked down 20 to 50%. Get there early for the best selection. You'll also be happy to know that they've started up their weekday and weekend classes again at Christy Weber Farm and Garden. You can learn about permaculture, lawn care, container design, and more by going to ChristyWeberFarmAndGarden.com and clicking on classes. Stop by 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village and take advantage of great prices on great garden plants and supplies. Find Christy Weber Farm and Garden on Facebook, online at CWFNG.com, or spell it out, ChristyWeberFarmAndGarden.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm honored to have on the phone with me Chip Taylor, who is the founder and director of Monarch Watch. Chip, a second ago we were talking about loss of habitat, and part of that, or at least the food that makes up, actually there's two different issues. There's the habitat issue, which is where, as you said, farmers are trying to squeeze more money out of the their crops and their land. They're unfortunately getting rid of hedgerows and that sort of thing, where we had habitat for monarchs. But the other thing that's going on is the use of herbicides, particularly Roundup or glyphosate, on the Roundup Ready corn and soybeans. In the old days, I believe you were the one, or somebody at the conference I was at the Chicago Botanic Garden, showed a photograph of a field. It was a soybean field, and there was a plant sticking up in the middle of it, and we were asked to identify it. And he said, in the old days, you would have probably said milkweed. Now, it's just a corn plant that happened to be rogue and come up in the middle of a soybean field, because he can't, because it's not being killed by the Roundup. But the milkweed is. Tell me about this issue.
Well, there are a number of things that are associated with glyphosate, and the number of things that are going to be happening in the future. First of all, this product was first on the market about 1996, and then it really began to take off at about 2003, then we began to see some problems with monarch butterflies. One of the issues here, the thing that we need to really clear up, is that the reason glyphosate and the reason that Roundup Ready crops have been a problem for monarch butterflies is that there used to be milkweed in those fields. Milkweed was one of the things that farmers had a difficult time getting rid of, because if you tried to use tillage to control weeds in those fields, it would chop up the plants, but they would come back. It was kind of like a sorcerer's apprentice, you know, with a little broom. You chop up the broom and it multiplies.
Yeah.
Anyway, that plant just kind of persisted out there. And it turned out in the year 2000, when a study was done about monarch habitats, that the most productive habitat turned out to be corn and soybean fields. And we were just absolutely blown over by that. We had no idea that many monarchs were produced in corn and soybean fields. Well, shortly thereafter, then the use of glyphosate increased, and it eliminated those milkweeds, and therefore there's no milkweed out there for all practical purposes. But there have been consequences of the use of this extensive amount of glyphosate. One of the things that's happened is that we now have about 16 weeds across the United States, and some of them are spreading very rapidly. I'm seeing them here in Kansas. I'm seeing them in Wisconsin and a number of other places. 16 weed species that are now tolerant of glyphosate. They've evolved a resistance to glyphosate, and these weeds are spreading rapidly, and they're causing all sorts of problems. Well, that's prompted the industry to respond by creating new types of plants that are resistant to up to four different types of herbicides. Now, not all of these are on the market yet, but the consequences of this are also of great concern. There's some other problems with glyphosate. It seems to be involved in compacting the soil if it's used extensively. And what that means is that eventually the root growth of the plants is actually restricted a bit if you overuse the glyphosate. And that means that if you restrict the root growth, you're going to restrict your crop production. So there are a number of consequences here that everybody should be concerned about. But and one of them is going forward. What are we going to see next? If glyphosate fades out from the system, and I think it probably will, what are we going to see next? Are we going to see something that's even worse in the future? I think this is one of the things that a lot of us are worried about. We need to know a little bit more about what's going to come on the market next.
That is something that you mentioned in your talk at the Chicago Botanic Garden back in June. And something that I talked about on the show a couple of months ago was there's a move, and I think it's Dow AgroSciences wants to combine glyphosate with 2,4-D. You know, now that the glyphosate, as you said, has created these super weeds and they're hard to control, their solution is let's make something that's even more toxic and put these chemicals together. What do you think of that idea?
Well, you know, we've been in this chemical warfare with various organisms in the past, and we don't generally win chemical warfare games here with wildlife because, you know, they're capable of evolving multiple tolerances to the things that we throw at them. You know, we're seeing this with all sorts of drug resistance, right? And we're seeing this with the very pathogens that affect human beings. I mean, we now only have a few really effective antibacterial drugs because we have overused so many drugs. And so we can get infections now, which are basically untreatable, except with one or two exceptions. And we could lose those, you know. So we're in an evolutionary battle here with the weeds. Should we go the chemical route? We got the beekeepers who are doing the same thing. They're trying to control mites in their colonies with chemicals. And they're trying to put chemicals in their colonies to control the mites, but don't kill the bees. And the mites are evolving resistance to these chemicals. You know, so this goes on and on and on. We see this scenario developing in various parts of the system where we try to employ chemical solutions. We see that the organisms have got chemical solutions as well. And that makes it very difficult to see where the future is going to go in this these sorts of things, because we don't win very many of these, as I pointed out, and you've got to wonder if there has to be another solution.
But that doesn't stop these companies from trying to do this. And I think it was you, if I'm not mistaken, who said there are, what, another dozen or more chemicals in the pipeline right now that are getting ready to be rolled out. And that just, that terrifies me.
Yeah, there's about 15 different plant products, some of which are designed to resist four different types of herbicides that are being evaluated by EPA. I don't. It's been months since I followed this, so I don't know if some of them have been improved or not. But that is the concern, and so that and we're already seeing evidence that some things are resistant to multiple herbicides. So when we go back at the mosquito sort of example and various other insects that we have thrown a lot of pesticides at, we've ended up with cases in which those organisms were resistant to multiple insecticides. And so there's no reason to expect that the plants won't do the same thing.
Let's take another quick phone call. Let's go to Lana in Des Plaines. Good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi, did you say my name?
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say, how much I'm enjoying your show and the conversation, but 2 or 3 years ago, I read Doug Tallamy. I've got a yard that's 53 by 130 feet deep, and we've planted, starting maybe 2-3 years ago, natives, plants, just as many species as I could possibly pack into the yard, including milkweeds. I've got the common milkweed and the swamp milkweed, which, by the way, does well in our yard in average soil, and the butterfly weed, and as well as many other plants. This has been a great year for us for butterflies. We've seen numerous monarchs. I actually raised one. It turned out to be a girl. You know, I discovered the caterpillar on the common milkweed plant in back of the yard. I've seen the monarchs flit around and watch them. I believe it looks like they've laid eggs on all three species of the plants. I'm raising two more monarchs now. One just turned a couple days ago into the pupa. It's been fascinating, and I just want to say, it can make a difference. I don't use any chemicals. I've removed numerous other plants. I do have some non-natives, but I think we can all make a difference, especially if we can get parks and schools involved. And the other thing that I've wondered about is all this land that's underneath power lines that go all across the country. Why can't native plants, and I read this somewhere, I don't know, maybe it was Doug telling me, why can't we put natives there? But each one of us, and I don't have full sun in my yard. I've got part sun. And I've had this year monarchs, black swallowtails, eastern tiger swallowtails, both the light and the black form, commas and question marks, as well as the common cabbage butterflies. There probably have been others. Oh, the American Painted Lady, I think, earlier in the year. It's really been absolutely amazing.
Well, Lana, you're doing great work, and you actually raised a really good question, and it's a fabulous segue to the next part of this conversation. I want to thank you very much for calling.
Thank you for your show.
All right, my pleasure. Thank you. Okay. Have a great Sunday.
Bye-bye.
And she brings up a really good point, Chip, which is how do we fight back? If we're losing 24 million acres of cropland in 5 years and we're losing milkweed because it's being wiped out by Roundup, how do we get that back? What is I've seen some things you've read, and it's going to require really a nationwide effort to make this happen, won't it?
Yes, that's exactly what I say on my website. I think that saving the monarch migration has to become some sort of a national priority, and so both of your callers are engaged in the right sort of thing. They're creating habitats in their own properties. And we've been trying to get people to do this since 2005. We have a program called the Monarch Way Station Program. I think we're up there with something like about 9,000 registered sites. And as your last caller brought out, we also want to get schools involved. And we have probably 800 or 900 schools involved in this Monarch Way Station Program. I think we just added another 200 or 250 this year, and we've gotten support to do that, and I've just gotten a little money to put together a coordinator for that program so we can get these schools to start communicating with each other and use these as real educational resources. But in any case, we need to get everybody involved, so we need to get all the gardeners involved, and we need to use all the habitat that's out there. So your last caller talked about rights of way sort of things, power lines and gas lines and things of that sort, and these are very much on our agenda. We're trying to get the power companies involved. So there's a lot of organizations out there. I'm a member of several of them. Monarch Joint Venture is one of them, and Monarch Joint Venture has got partners which have created all sorts of educational materials for the people who are thinking about modifying rights of way areas. And, you know, of course, we're trying to work on the DOTS, the Departments of Transportation around the country, get them to change their practices. We need to work with the railroads. We need to work with all of the park systems, both federal and state and county. And it's amazing. We can do this. I mean, I have people coming to me almost every week and saying, what can we do to help? And it looks like we're going to form quite a few partnerships that will help in this. But we need to bring everybody on board here.
Let's take another quick call. Pat, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Mike, I have a question, and then I want to tell a story, if I may. First of all, I was listening to Tom Hartman a week ago, and I was busy, so I didn't catch the beginning. But he was talking about a chemical being introduced that had a nice new name, but it was Agent Orange, was the real product marketed under something else. Do you know what that product is?
He's probably talking about what we just talked about a couple of minutes ago, which is 2,4-D. The way it works is that 2,4-D is a broadleaf weed killer. It has a cousin called 2,4-5-T, which is which kills woody plants. When you put them together, you get Agent Orange. So basically, we're talking about one half of Agent Orange in 2,4-D. Chip, does that sound like what he was talking about?
I don't know the conversation, but I would assume so. There was a contaminant in that Agent Orange that
right.
created all of the problems. And if you go to the websites and you've got a strong stomach, you can see the consequences of Agent Orange still being felt in Vietnam.
Yeah, and the idea is that 2,4-D doesn't necessarily have the dioxin that Agent Orange had, and as you said, the contamination chip, but it is powerful. I mean, it's a weed killer. It kills plants, and this is it is connected to Agent Orange. 2,4-D is connected to it. It is part of that chemical, and that's that. And I didn't hear that segment either, but that may have been what he was talking about. And what's your story, Pat?
Well, I live out in the rural area just across the state line here, and my road is a mile long. In the last 30 years, every family has had a death from cancer, all kinds of different cancers, brain, lung, breast, colon. I myself have had two cancers. Our pets have died, you know, various things. And I've come to conclude, even though I have my well-tested, you know, it's got too much atrazine, but I think we're not keeping up with the chemicals enough to know. And I personally look at it as a gift that I'm a survivor, and I look and say, wait a minute. The common denominator has to be what the farmers are putting, not knowingly, on their crops to kill all these weeds. It's getting into the aquifer, and it's spreading into our wells. And my thought is, we've got to stop this because we have such a horrendous problem. One of the cancers I had, they did ask me if I'd been exposed to Agent Orange because it was such a rare cancer. And I looked at them and said, heck no. But we are using so many chemicals. We put it on our lawns. We put it on places where our children and our pets go. We got to do something because I find that I'm a gifted person to have survived, but many of the cancers we're finding now have to be related to what we're using.
That's a very good comment, Pat, and I appreciate it. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Chip, she's got a point there, and I think part of our problem as a society, and I'm speaking about the United States, is that we do not practice the precautionary principle. We create these chemicals, these herbicides. You talked about the antibiotics that, and we do it, and then look back 10 years later and say, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea, when we should be doing it in the first place. We should be researching these properly before we drop them on our population.
Yeah, and there's another subject which hasn't come up with regard to pesticides, and that's a group of pesticides called neonicotinamides.
Right.
Neonicotinamides are systemic insecticides that are being applied very liberally, and they've been used in most of the plants that you get in the big box stores. They're being used in an awful lot of plants around the country. They're being used on corn seeds and so on and so forth. And there's a lot of difficulty with these neonicotinamides. They're called neonics for short. Now these contaminations are showing up in water courses, and if these concentrations in water systems get to be high enough, and it's already indicated in some places that they are, they're going to eliminate aquatic invertebrates. So that means they're going to eliminate the aquatic insects and all the other invertebrate life and aquatic systems because they're susceptible to these compounds. If that happens, then you lose your fish, you lose your fish-eating birds, and so on and so forth. Yes, you're absolutely right. Once we implement these types of things, it usually takes us 10 or 15 years to say, whoa, wait a minute, we didn't do this right. Let's turn this around. I mean, so the rhetoric we get on most of these things is very similar to what we saw with tobacco. In other words, none of the evidence that comes up showing a negative effect is accepted. It's challenged at every possible way, and this makes it very difficult in a litigation society to move this forward and to have some common sense directives here so that we're not poisoning ourselves.
Yeah, you know, the problem I have with these products is that the EPA
We'll look at them. Well, there's a couple of issues here. One is that the, from what I understand, the EPA does not look at how chemicals react with one another. So, for instance, if you have 2,4-D and glyphosate in the same formula, they'll look at how glyphosate acts in the environment. They'll look at how 2,4-D acts in the environment, but they won't look at how they act, react together in the environment. And, you know, if you're a person who's on medication, you know that you have to be really careful about bringing other medicines in because they might have an adverse reaction, the two of them together. Yet we don't look at that in our environment with the chemicals we're putting out there.
Yeah, these are called synergistic effects, and we see this already with, you know, human medication. We're seeing it in the case of the honeybee colonies that are treated with multiple chemicals. There are synergistic effects with these, and these honeybee colonies among the different chemicals, so that the two of them together, two chemicals together, have a much stronger impact than one chemical or either chemical separately. So, this is a real issue, and this is one of the difficulties we have. We have another difficulty, and that is the EPA really doesn't have the resources to do all of the independent testing that needs to be done, and we don't have enough people outside the EPA that are doing independent testing. So largely, we have to rely on the producer of these chemicals to provide the data. And
yeah, and sure, they're going to tell you that when used according to label directions, they're perfectly safe. This is the line that often comes out of these companies. They're the ones doing the testing, not the EPA, as you say, because EPA is doesn't have the staff to do this or the money. And then these chemical companies say, don't worry, they're perfectly safe when used within or used by if you follow the label directions. It's just unbelievable. Okay, listen, real short break. When we come back, part of the reason you're here today, Chip, and I got a couple more calls. I'm going to try to get those in, is to give us a status report on monarchs because you've been following them this season. We know that the numbers were perilously low in Mexico last year. When we come back, I want you to give us that update, okay?
Will do.
All right, that's Chip Taylor from Monarch Watch, and we will be back with him and the state of the monarchs 2014 right after this.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakening Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Blue skies go. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south.
Welcome to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We are talking to Chip Taylor, who is the founder and director of Monarch Watch. Chip, last winter was not good for the monarchs. They go to Mexico to overwinter. Tell us about the numbers there and what you're seeing this summer in the United States.
Well, Mike, and to your listeners, you know, last year we saw the third decline in a row. We've had this population decline 3 years in a row, and for each of the last several years, we've been able to predict which direction the population would go as early as May, because we kind of looked at all of the data in the spring, and it kind of helps us get a pretty good grip on what the population is going to do. And we watch very carefully what happens in Texas, and then we watch what happens in Oklahoma and Kansas, and then through the summer months, and it gives us a pretty good handle on what's going to happen. So we knew the population was going to be down last year, and it was. It was the lowest that had ever been seen. It was very, very sad. There were really a tremendous number of concerned people in Mexico, concerned tourists, concerned all over the monarch community about the low numbers of monarchs that arrived in Mexico last winter. Fortunately, the conditions this spring were much better than they were each of the last three springs, and the butterflies are on the route to make a rebound. Just how much of an increase they're going to make is not clear. But what we're getting is positive reports from all over the country, and we pretty much forecast all of that. We did forecast all of that as early as May, based on temperatures, based on what we were seeing in Texas, based on how fast the butterflies moved into the upper Midwest and the breeding areas. And it's looked good ever since. We were worried that we would have a really cold summer, and if we had a really cold summer, that would slow things down and reduce the population. But summer is more or less normal, a little cold in some places, but not too cold for the butterflies. And so it looks like the populations have developed well. We're going to see good butterfly populations from the eastern Dakotas right through southern Michigan. The East Coast is going to be a little bit better than it was last year. Not great, but a little bit better. Through the Ohio Valley, we're getting pretty good reports. Through northern Illinois, we're getting good reports. Iowa, we haven't had very many reports from, but we're seeing a lot of monarchs here in Kansas, more than we've seen in each of the last 2 years. So things are looking good. The population is going to rebound. Just how big it's going to be, it's not clear, but it'll still be a small population by historical standards.
Yeah, when you tell people that that the population is doing better, it's not time to say, wow, we fixed that problem and move on. We still need to address it.
Oh yeah, this is the best I think we can see is a doubling of the population. We may get a doubling. We may even get a little bit better than that. That doubling would still be one of the all-time low numbers. But it would indicate that the butterflies can make a rebound, and we know they can. We just have to have the habitat for them. And right now the concern is, you know, we're still losing habitat. We're losing habitat at the rate of 1 million to 2 million acres a year, and we've got to address that. So one of the things that people can see if they go to our website is that they can see that I've written up something called the Monarch Recovery Plan. And the Monarch Recovery Plan says, you know, if we want to move ahead and maintain this population, we have to address the issue of the amount of habitat we're losing every year. And that means we have to replace, we have to restore enough milkweed monarch habitat to compensate for the loss of 1 million to 1.5 million acres of habitat every year.
And you want people to plant milkweed, and that's another thing that you've been working very hard on at Monarch Watch. And if they go to the website, again, it's monarchwatch.org. What can they find out about milkweed?
Well, they can go to the milkweed market, and if we don't have the milkweeds for them, they can find a local nursery that has them. We worked with a nursery here, and we started this program last year, and I didn't know that it would work. We asked the nurseryman to produce 25,000 milkweeds, and as I tell people, I think I was pretty optimistic, thinking that I could sell 25,000 milkweed plugs. But we sold 22,000 of them in the first year, and this year our goal was 40,000, and we've already sold 54,000. and we're still selling them. So I'm not sure whether we've got milkweeds available for the northern Illinois area, but we have them available for some parts of the country, and we're going to have a lot for next spring. So if your listeners are interested in getting involved in this crusade, have them contact us and start thinking about what they can do to plant milkweeds next spring, and we'll produce the milkweeds for the northern Illinois area.
Chip Taylor, thank you so much. He's the founder and director of Monarch Watch. Again, go to monarchwatch.org. You can find all that information. I hope folks will do that, and we'll keep an eye on things, and maybe in 6 months or so, we'll talk again and see what's happening.
All right, Mike. It's nice chatting with you.
It's great chatting with you, and thank you for doing the whole hour. It flew by for me, and I know you're a busy guy, and you just got back in the town, so go take a nap.
Yeah. Well, stay cool, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow. I'm sorry I can't get to Greg, Nick. I can't get to your calls. We're flat out of time. Maybe you can call in again, and we'll talk about that stuff. But that was pretty amazing, and I'm glad that Chip was able to be with us. All right. Thanks. Go out. Plant some milkweed, everybody. You got your mic on there, Carol? Because I'm going to say go green or
go home.
Appreciate it.